Hidden within all of the storms of your life is the peace that you desire.
Dr. Wayne Dyer presents a new interpretation of an ancient wisdom text, the Tao Te Ching.
Many people call this a manual for achieving a way of life that literally guarantees integrity, joy, peace, and balance in our life. Change your thoughts based upon the wisdom of the Tao, and your life will change.
Join Dr. Dyer as he reveals how to live the wisdom of the Tao and achieve higher consciousness. When Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life airs next.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be back on public television. It's now 10 years we've been creating public television programs. It's been a wonderful journey. I obviously support public television. It's a way to bring higher consciousness to our entire country, and I'm proud and pleased to be here. This is a program about changing your life. Not in the traditional way that we think of when we think about changing our lives. Usually that means changing your behaviors, retraining yourself, getting new habits, going out and trying them out and changing your life. This is about changing your thoughts, and then your life will change. Change your thoughts, change your life. It's the name of this program, it's the name of the book. It is something that I very, very strongly endorse, that we have within us the ability and the capacity, through the way that we use our minds and the way that we process things and events, to make our lives totally shift and change around. And I can tell you that it doesn't make any difference what age you are, whether you're a teenager watching this, or whether you're someone in your 60s, 70s, 80s, or anywhere along the way, you can make that change. And I'll tell you, it happened for me 2 years ago. On the 10th of May, I turned 65. And the next day, on the 11th of May, I had a life-changing thing take place for me. I changed the way that I was thinking about who I am, about what kind of a man I am, about what kind of a person I intend to be for the rest of my life and where I'm going. And something began to resonate with me that I had to make a shift and make a change at the age of 65. I had a wonderful office, which was really a townhouse. It was filled with over 20,000 books. It was filled with clothing. It was filled with records of all kinds. It had pictures on the wall. I had awards that I had received over the years, and everything that I had accumulated, literally, in this physical world, had accumulated in that office. I turned the key and handed it to my manager, Maya, who's been with me for almost 30 years, and I said, I would like you to sell everything or distribute everything that's in there. Sell the townhouse, get rid of it. Take all the records, all the books. I got rid of my shoes. And I left it all behind and turned it over to her to get rid of everything. I detached myself from a lifetime of accumulations. And I moved full-time to a place over in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on one of our great islands called Maui. And in the next months, I began to get a lot of things coming to me about what my life was to what was to unfold, things that I wasn't even expecting. And I think about this idea about what age you are and whether or not changes and shifts can be made, and how difficult so many people attribute this to. They say it's just, that's an impossibility. I couldn't possibly do that. I'm so attached to all of these things. Or I'm too old. I've been living in the same place too long. Whatever it might be. Right here in this audience is one of the women that I revere. I think more than any other woman I can think of in the professional world. At the age of 60, she changed her thoughts, and her life changed dramatically. She started a publishing company called Hay House, which is one of the world's largest publishers of spiritual and higher consciousness materials. She wrote a book called You Can Heal Your Life. She's here today. Her name is Louise Hay. Louise, would you stand up and be acknowledged? Thank you for that. Louise, with a great number of people from all over the world, just celebrated her 80th birthday. So, I should look so good even at 60, all right? And I'm just so deeply honored that you're here, dear. Thank you. What happened for me in the next few months was absolutely life-changing. I had a friend tell me who was severely addicted to all kinds of drugs and alcohol, who was basically very close to death. He refused all kinds of treatment. He wouldn't go through the programs and so on. But he read a book. And the book was called The Tao Te Ching. The Tao Te Ching. T-A-O-T-E-C-H-I-N-G. Tao Te Ching. Tao, in ancient Chinese, means the way, the great way. T-E is the term that means the application of or the virtue of. And Ching, in ancient Chinese, means book. So it's the book for applying the virtue of living the way. That's what this book means. And he told me that, and I thought, I've heard of the Tao Te Ching. I've heard of Taoism. I'm familiar with that. I had read about it when I was in college. I'd even lectured a little bit about it when I was teaching at a university in New York City, at St. John's University. It was something that I had sort of a cursory awareness of. But it wasn't something that I was really profoundly interested in. I was watching a TV show one night, and someone talked about the Tao on there. I walk into a bookstore, and there's a copy of the Tao. This is all happening in the 6 months or so that between when I had left and knowing that it was time for me to detach myself from all of the things that had been so much a part of my life and move on into a new area of my life. So I couldn't resist it any longer, and I said, I really want to read the Tao, and I'm going to take the next year, a full year. And in that year, what I would like to do is I would like to read each verse. There are 81 verses in the Tao Te Ching. You can read it in an afternoon, but you can study it for a lifetime. And in the studying of this, I said I would like to just take those 365 days for the next year, and in every 4 days, I am going to read one verse. Some of them are only 4 lines long. Some of them are 12, 16 lines long. I'm going to create for myself a way of seeing if I can live this Tao. And what I did was I would read it, then I would meditate on it, I would walk on it, I would go swim on it. When I would do yoga, I would practice it, and then I would sit down after the fourth day. And I had a picture of the man who was considered to be the author of this, although there's no historical actual record of his name, is Lao Tzu. This is the visage that I looked at. This is the image of an artist's drawing of Lao Tzu. In ancient Chinese means old man. Old man. He was the old man who was living in China in the time of the warring states, and he decided he didn't want any more to do with war and violence and hatred and killing and all of the things that were so much a part of his world. And he got on his oxen and he left, and before he left to go off and be by himself, he dictated some 5,000 Chinese characters, these 81 verses that became the Tao Te Ching. There are some people who call the Tao Te Ching the wisest book ever written. If you Google this thing called the Tao Te Ching, you'll come up with over 1,300,000 hits on the Tao Te Ching. Not only that, there are 14,000 translations of the Tao Te Ching that I have come across. So what I did is I took 10 of those translations, the ones that seem to be the most relevant, the ones that seem to have the most meaning to those people who lived in this part of the Western world, and I combined them into what I consider to be the most useful translation of the Tao Te Ching. And each morning I would get up and I would look at this picture and I would ask, what is it that you would say to the people who are living now at this time, given the conditions that we have in our life right here? What is it you would do? Many people call this a manual for achieving a way of life that literally guarantees integrity, joy, peace, and balance in our life. Now, there was a man who was a contemporary of Lao Tzu. His name was Confucius. He was many years younger than Lao Tzu, but he kept hearing about this old man who had all of this great wisdom. And one day, he decided that he was going to go, legend says, and visit Lao Tzu. And he spent a full day listening to this man, because Confucius was someone in China who was trying to lay down all the rules of etiquette and how to conduct yourself and trying to dictate to the people what they should be. Lao Tzu had nothing to do with any of that. And when he went to see Lao Tzu, he came back and he talked to all of his people. And this is what he said. He said, "Of birds, I know they have wings to fly with. Of fish, that they have fins to swim with. Of wild beasts, that they have feet to run with. For feet, there are traps. For fins, there are nets. For wings, arrows. But who knows how dragons surmount wind and cloud into heaven? This day, I have seen Lao Tzu, and he is a dragon." And there he is, a dragon. And a dragon in ancient Chinese was a picture of someone or something that was so mysterious and so difficult to comprehend, because it could always be something else. There was a great teacher who came many years after that. His name was Rumi, who was a Jalaluddin Rumi, who was a great poet, a Persian poet in the 14th century. And he had a line. He said, "The day that you were born, a ladder was set up to help you to escape from this world." I believe that the Tao Te Ching and this thing that I have done, this change your thoughts, change your life effort that I spent one full year on every single day doing exactly what I just said, is a ladder that will help you to return. In the Tao, there's a very famous line. The 40th verse of the Tao says, "Returning is the motion of the Tao." Returning is the motion of the Tao. So that all of us came from a divine spiritual essence, invisible. Everything in the world of form emanated from something that is formless. There was a split second when you went from non-being to being. And what Lao Tzu was trying to teach was to be able to return to that place from which you came and live your life from the spiritual perspective and become a God-realized being. Another great poet, T.S. Eliot, once said, "We shall not cease from exploration. And at the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time." For the first time. What I'm asking you to do, and what Lao Tzu seemed to be saying, was learn to die while you're alive. Because you will ultimately return. All of us have a return trip, a round trip ticket when we came in, didn't we? But if you could learn to die while you're alive, and there's a great story. I have to tell you this story. I want to read this story to you. It's a way to look at this idea of dying while you're alive. It goes like this. To die while we are alive gives us the only opportunity we will ever have to get outside of this package that houses us temporarily. There's an ancient parable that repeated generation after generation by the spiritual masters of India, which illustrates this point. Listen to this wonderful story. A traveler from India went to Africa to acquire some local products and animals. And while in the jungle, he saw thousands of beautiful, multicolored talking parrots. He decided to capture a talking parrot and take it back as his pet. At home, he kept his parrot in a cage, and he fed him, and he gave him wonderful seeds and honey and played music for his pet, and generally, he treated him very well. When it was time for the man to return to Africa 2 years later, he asked his parrot if there was any message that he could deliver to the parrot's friends who were back in the jungle. Well, the parrot told his master to say that he was very happy in his cage and that he was enjoying each day and to convey his love. Well, when the traveler arrived back in Africa, he delivered the message to the parrots back in the jungle. Just as he finished his story, a parrot with tears welling up in his eyes fell over dead. The man was alarmed, and he decided that the parrot must have been very close to the parrot in the cage and that this was probably the reason for the sadness and for his demise. When the traveler returned to India, he told his pet what had happened. As he finished his story, the pet parrot's eyes welled up with tears, and he kneeled over dead in his cage. The man was astounded, but he figured that his pet died from the despair of hearing of the death of his close friend back in the jungle. The trader opened up the cage and tossed the dead bird outside onto the trash heap. Immediately, the pet parrot flew up to a branch on the tree outside. The trader said to him, "So you're not dead after all. Why did you do that? You tricked me." And the parrot responded, "Because that bird back in Africa sent me a very important message." "What was the message?" the trader wanted to know. "He told me that if you want to escape from your cage, you must die while you're alive." We must indeed die while we are alive in order to be able to look back at our waking consciousness and see ourselves trapped in our cage, which in our case is our body. And then we will see how unnecessary it is to remain caged. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. Yeah, you can applaud. What I encourage you to do is to create for yourself a sacred space. And in this sacred space, I would like you to place everything that has energy value to you. Photographs. I have this photograph that I looked at every day for 1 year and began to talk to after a while. It's a little weird, but you begin to get this idea. And those of you who wonder why I am wearing no shoes, I'd like you to know that where I live, you never walk into a sacred space with your shoes on. It would be considered dishonorable to do so. And to me, this stage, this setting, this beautiful place, and this beautiful symbol is a sacred, sacred space. I live without shoes. I heard it said once that if you wear shoes everywhere you go, the whole earth will feel like leather. And it's nice to feel what the earth feels like and to feel that naturalness. So in that sacred space, you will feel the energy of the photographs, of any mementos that you have, of pictures of your children, of drawings, of statues, of anything at all that you can think of. I have a beautiful sacred space, and it calls me. And as it calls me, when I go into that place that is so profoundly sacred to me, the most beautiful things begin to happen for me, particularly in the middle of the night when no one else is up, and I feel closest to God, and I feel closest to this beautiful old man who sent so many important messages to me through his Tao Te Ching and in my meditations to help me to create this program, change your thoughts, change your life, living the wisdom of the Tao.